Gather around your speakers, hoop heads. It's NBA story time. Jamel Johnson here to spin you tales of NBA shenanigans you didn't know you needed to know. Like that time when a little startup league tried anything to be relevant, or when Ricky Davis earned himself a dumb nickname. I also love you, Ricky Davis. Catch a new tale on NBA Storytime every week, then listen to the postgame where I break it down with comedians, ballers, and what have you. Find NBA Storytime on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
This podcast episode is brought to you by Coors Light. These days, everything is go, go, go. It's nonstop hustle all the time. Work, friends, family expect you to be on 24/7. Well, sometimes you just need to reach for a Coors Light because it's made to chill. Coors Light is cold lagered, cold filtered, and cold packaged. It's as crisp and refreshing as the Colorado Rockies. It is literally made to chill. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So when you want to hit reset, reach for the beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light in the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado.
Fans of the Wash Up Walk-Ons, what's up, guys? It's Tyler. Want to pop in real quick. This is a bonus episode. What you guys are about to hear is an episode that our boy, current 49er, former Hawkeye, George Kittle, did with current NFL tight end Greg Olsen, one of the legends in the tight end game, been around forever. Greg Olsen has a new podcast on Blue Wire, who you guys know we just announced we signed with Blue Wire Podcast Network. Greg Olsen has a podcast called TE1 on that network as well, and we're super excited that we can be a part of a network that has people like Greg in it. And he did a podcast with George, and it's a really good one. They go for an hour, and because George is from Iowa, he's part of our market, he's part of our demographic, the Iowa Brotherhood. We figured this would be a perfect crossover episode, so you guys are going to get to hear from Greg and from George for an hour straight, and everybody loves a bonus, right? So a three-episode week for the Wash Up Walk-Ons. Go rate Tight End 1 and follow that podcast as well as our podcast. Give it a subscription. Give it a rating. Give it a review. It helps both podcasts. It helps everybody grow. It's a win-win-win-win-win. All right. Enjoy this podcast with George Kittle and Greg Olsen.
TE1 is brought to you by the strongest, most advanced Chevy Silverado ever. This truck is all about grit, strength, and dependability. The same attributes it takes to be a tight end. And just like the incredible tight ends we sit down with on my new show, the Chevy Silverado is in a league of its own. This episode of TE1 is brought to you by Bud Light Seltzer. These seltzers are rocking 100 calories and less than 1 gram of sugar. Personally, I'm a grapefruit guy, but there's a flavor for everybody. And you can get any flavor delivered right to your door at budlight.com/delivery. I'm Greg Olsen, and this is TE1, the podcast where we explore the evolution of the tight end position through conversations with some of the best players of all time. Hey guys, what's going on? Welcome back to TE1. I'm your host, Greg Olsen, and today I'm going to be talking to George Kittle. So on today's episode, we got to talk to who I think is one of the most interesting and exciting players in the entire NFL, regardless of position, and that is San Francisco 49ers, George Kittle. He's part WWE wrestler, part cartoon character, and then on Sundays, he's arguably the best tight end in the game today. And just a really good guy, just a really interesting backstory. And just a guy who, again, I think as we talk about this arc and this evolution of the position on the heels of someone like Travis Kelce, he's the most relevant, modern voice and person that we could ask to carry this conversation forward into the present. He right now is the standard of what an NFL tight end is, both in the run game and pass game. And I just really enjoyed this conversation with George. Just a heads up, this conversation was recorded before George signed his new contract with the 49ers. Well, first of all, thanks so much for joining us. This is exciting for me. First and foremost, you've been a hard guy to track down the last 2 days. You've had PT. I can see now, if for anyone who obviously no one can see you but me, he's got on this like nice tank top. Traps look big. Nike. Oh, yeah. Shout out to Nike, both Nike clients. I can see you got a nice pump. You got a little shaker bottle, a little protein. All right. Because you made us wait and at 30 minutes, you got to tell us what today's workout was.
Today was a lower body lift. We did 5x5 front squat, 3 second eccentric with a 3 second ISO hold at the bottom.
All right. So for people listening, eccentric is the lower. So when he went down, stopped.
Okay. Hold for three.
Hold for three.
And then up.
All right. So we're going to challenge our listeners to do the.
It was awful.
The Kittle. There's nothing worse than eccentric.
I know.
It's the worst thing ever.
Except when you combine it with ISO, then it's just absolutely brutal.
Then you want to just slit your throat. Well, good, man. So for anyone who follows you on Instagram, obviously you post a lot of the videos. I know I've seen a lot of your stuff. I've stolen some of the drills. Are you still working out in the garage or have you guys moved? So now is the garage at your house?
Yeah, I know. I literally, as soon as, long story short, I was supposed to get married in Italy this summer. And back in like February, the whole country shut down. And so we're like, oh, well, it's probably going to happen in America at some point. So we just ordered a whole bunch of gym equipment. And my whole garage is basically just a whole gym now. I got a Stairmaster, like lat pull down machine, assault bike. It's awesome.
Buddy, you got it all. Well, the one piece of equipment I want to talk about, because I've seen your videos, I've seen it all. I want to talk about that Jugs machine.
Mm.
Do you use it? Like, let's be honest. I know they sent it to you and it's sick. Blink twice if you actually use it. Okay, he actually uses it. So that's good.
Yeah, no, it's awesome. It's really fun. I got two guys. One was a former teammate at Iowa. Then one went to high school with my wife and then also went to the University of Iowa. So they're part of this company called Monarch, and that's the Jugs machine. And it's really awesome, especially to use in my backyard. And you put it holds six balls and it'll throw them to you at different spots. So it covers like nine different spots all over your body. Or you can like run routes with it. You can put it on a football field and you can run like six go routes. You can run a slant, an end. So you really don't need a quarterback. It's pretty fun.
Tell Garoppolo you don't even need him.
I live in Nashville and CJ Beathard lives here too. And then he just like disappeared. And I was like, all right, well, I need a quarterback now. So it's been really helpful.
Well, for anyone who hasn't seen it, it's super cool. That's a pretty cool deal. But you mentioned your wife. I know you're there in Nashville with your family. Mm-hmm. Let's go back to that. Take us back to the beginning. We all know, obviously, you've kind of burst onto the scene here in the NFL, setting records, kind of setting new benchmarks for the position. But let's go back not too long ago, considering that you're relatively young.
26,
26. God, I remember when I was 26.
What was that? 5 years ago?
10? 9?
You're 34?
35.
Quick maths, but yeah. Wow, really? That's
35,
awesome.
35, dude. It goes fast. I'll tell you. I remember. It goes fast. I was 26 when I got traded from Chicago to Carolina, and I felt like a young stallion, and here I am now. It's not so much.
Greg, I'll say, as when I grew up a diehard Bears fan, when they traded you, it was pretty tough for me, so...
Thank you.
Yeah, I was pretty upset about that.
What I've found is people liked me a lot more after I got traded in Chicago than they did when I actually played there. Like people there, you would have thought I was Mike Ditka. And which I guess, hey, hindsight, man. Yeah. But take us back. You were born in Wisconsin.
I was.
Raised in Iowa, went to a few different schools. I know you played for your father. I know he's had a huge impact in your life. We're going to get to that here in a minute. But your whole family, mom, dad, sister, your wife, everybody, sports is just kind of how you're kind of made in the Kittle household. Give us a little idea of what that was like growing up in that sort of environment.
It was really fun for me. I mean, my dad played at Iowa. My mom played at Drake University, which is in Des Moines, Iowa. Side fact, my mom actually is in the Hall of Fame of Iowa High School Hall of Fame for softball and basketball.
Shout out to mom.
She averaged, her batting average her senior year was .500. So,
Jesus.
Yeah, not bad. She was an absolute animal.
Was she a slap hitter or power hitter?
Power, dude. She rocked power. It. I think she had like 65 RBIs her senior year.
Jesus.
Not bad.
I feel like I should be interviewing her.
You should. She's a lot cooler than I am. So I had my mom was a big time athlete. My dad was an offensive lineman. But like growing up, like football is about all I ever did. We grew up. I lived on farms everywhere, so we would always just throw the football around, and that's about all I did. And then my dad actually ended up, he coached me and my sister in every single sport that we played basically until high school. That's awesome. He would just, yeah. So fifth grade football, sixth grade football, seventh, eighth. And then once I got to high school, then he was a high school coach. He did the same thing with my sister. Like, he was my AAU basketball coach. He was my, my T-ball coach. Every sport I played, he was my head coach. It was pretty fun. Like, he's not the best soccer coach or baseball coach, but cause he's an offensive lineman, but you know, he tried his best.
That's awesome. That resonates with me. My father, for 40 years was a high school football coach. I grew up outside of New York in New Jersey. So he coached me and all my brothers. We went to the high school that he coached at. He retired after my youngest brother went through there, but, so I understand. I'm now living that world. I have a 9-year-old son and then 7-year-old twins. Mm. And so I am flag football coach. I'm like running out of the facility on practice night at like 6 o'clock trying to race to get there Saturdays for as many games as I can. Coaching their baseball teams, trying to help with the girls' soccer is a little above my pay grade.
Yeah, true.
I might have to ask your dad for some tips on that because I'm struggling with that world.
His thing in soccer was always be more physical than your opponents. And he usually works in soccer.
Fair enough.
Yeah, why not?
Fair enough. That's a good coaching point. I'm going to try that 7-year-old girls soccer on Saturday mornings.
Slide tackle really hard.
Cleats up.
Cleats up, of course.
Cleats up.
Yeah, they're not going to call anything at that age, are they?
No, come on.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm a little familiar. So my father went to college with his brother. They went to college out at Midland Lutheran College, which is in Midland, Nebraska.
Oh, wow.
My uncle, my father's brother, stayed out there, and he actually became the football coach in Council Bluffs.
Oh, no way.
Right across the river. We always talk about going out there for the College World Series and seeing him and whatnot. My one cousin played basketball at Creighton. So we have a little familiarity out in that world out there by you.
Yeah, no, it's I got a lot of like former teammates are from Council Bluffs and Okoboji's out in that direction, which is like a big lake, which is a blast. So I'm definitely on Western Iowa sometimes, but I always grew up on the east side. So like Iowa City and Mount Pleasant's more my way to go.
I gotcha. Well, obviously, all right, so talk us back. So right now, you know, we're having conversations with, for over the last 60 years, some of the greatest tight ends who've ever played, right? And the one thing that everybody shared in common, and I'm curious to see if this stays true, is nobody played tight end as a kid.
No.
Nobody, including myself.
No.
What was your first experience as a tight end? I'm assuming you grew up as a running back.
Let's see. Well, like I grew up like fun. Like my dad, when he was my fifth grade coach, he made the entire team do offensive line pass setting drills.
Nice.
Like his speech to our team was, hey, all of you are going to aspire to be offensive linemen, but not all of you are good enough to be that. Like some players have to be quarterback. Some guys have to be running back. And I was the only one that knew he was lying or
it's an interesting twist.
It is. But like you have a bunch of fifth graders that are all like, oh my God, like you had like 4 foot tall little cornerbacks that were like, I'm going to play left tackle. It's like, no, you're not, man.
That's awesome.
So like I was always in like the blocking realm was always just kind of in my head. But yeah, I mean, I grew up, I was a running back, defensive end, free safety. And then I got to eighth grade and I was half the size of everybody else. So that was tough.
Yeah.
I didn't hear growth spurt till I was like 21. It's wild.
Really? So when you're in high school, right? So let's talk. Talk to us about what was George Kittle like in high school? Were you like the best player on the field?
Oh,
were
no.
You weren't like the big, oversized, dominant force that stuck out?
No, my junior year, I was 6'1", 170, maybe. My senior year, I was 6'1", 175, 180. When I gained 70 pounds between my senior year of high school and my senior year of college. Wow. And I grew 2 inches. So that was nice.
Whatever's in that shaker bottle.
I don't know, man. I got lucky. Like I said, like I hit puberty at literally the age of 21. It was crazy. In high school, I was a wide receiver free safety. So I think I put my hand in the dirt like twice to play tight end. We'd run a couple bootlegs, but that was about it.
So now you start getting recruited.
Yeah.
Obviously, you end up at Iowa. Mm-hmm. We're going to talk here in a minute. I know you grew up a guy that I also grew up really aspiring and watching and studying in Dallas Clark. I know he was the guy that made a huge impact on you. But now when colleges were coming to recruit you and you end up going to Kirk Ferentz at Iowa, was it to play tight end or were you still in that like body size where you could have just been like a solid outside receiver type? But
yeah, my only offers really were I had Weber State and I had Air Force and Navy were my only offers. And then on signing day, I got an offer from Iowa because they had like two or three guys that went to other schools.
Interesting.
Yeah. So that was, I was pretty, you know, happy about that because my dad played there and, you know, following in the footsteps was always fun.
Yeah.
I think my first day on campus, I was like 6'2", 198 or 200 pounds. And then they're just like, hey, we're going to put you with the tight ends. Just see what happens. Like, try it out. And like after my freshman year, because I was okay, but I never really blocked before or anything like that. I almost got moved to outside linebacker. So I'm pretty glad I didn't move to outside linebacker. I'm glad I stayed at tight end.
Yeah, I think it's worked out.
Yeah, it's all right. But so after my freshman year and I stayed at tight end, and that's kind of just when I was a full tight end after that. But when I first got there, they just were like, we're just going to see what you can do.
Interesting. And now that tight end group that you joined, when you look back, I mean, Noah Fant, yourself, mm-hmm. CJ Fedorowicz, I mean, you had a crowded room there. Mm-hmm. And little did you know, a few years later, when you get drafted to San Francisco, you were going to find yourself in a crowded room. Talk about what that was like as a young guy who's changing positions, which is very common amongst the tight end world. But now you find yourself with NFL caliber guys. I mean, Noah Fant's a first round pick. CJ Fedorowicz has played in the league for years. Mm-hmm. You know, what experiences did you pull out of competing every day just to find yourself able to get on the field? What did you draw from that has kind of allowed you to keep this edge now as you've gotten, you know, obviously so successful at the next level?
So my freshman year I had, Fedorowicz was a junior. His name was Ray Hamilton, who was like a 6'6", tight end. And then below them was Jake Doozy, who was a really, really good tight end, very similar to me. He actually got hurt his senior year, which was tough for, it was just awful. But, and then my cousin, Henry, was actually a tight end as well in the room. So that was really fun. And so it was us five, and then Steve Ferentz was a tight end, Coach Ferentz's son. He was in the room for 1 year before he switched over to center. That's a tough transition. Tight end to center.
That's tough.
But yeah. So
when your dad's the coach, you got nobody to call up and bitch to.
No, you don't. It's like, hey, dad. Nope, you're going to center. Okay, sounds good. Yeah, that's fun. But so like in that room, it was really fun. What I loved about like our tight end room was everyone was like really good friends with each other. And the fact that I had my cousin in there who I grew up with and like we were best friends growing up. So he kind of just took me under his wing and like really helped me transition throughout, you know, those first couple years. Cause like I was stuck at like 220 for 3 years at Iowa, which is tough to play tight end as like 220 and try to run block. And it was really that spring ball going into my redshirt junior year that I ended up gaining like an extra 20 pounds and just kind of figured it out. But it definitely took me like 3 years to realize like, hey, football's a little bit harder than high school, like college football is. So you got to really figure it out. But yeah, like you said, the competition was awesome every single day, like getting to see that. And then like really like Noah Fant came in. That was my senior years when Noah and TJ Hawkinson came in. And I was like, well, I'm kind of glad I'm getting out because those guys are going to do some damage at the college level for sure.
Yeah, I mean, you've been your entire college career. I mean, you just named four guys. I mean, two first round picks. Fedorowicz played for a while, obviously yourself. I mean, in a four or five year run, I mean, I guess the only school that could probably beat that would be Miami.
I knew you were going to say that.
Hey, it was too easy.
What school had two tight ends go in the first round?
That's true. You guys do hold that. That's true. Trust me, I get it. But it's funny because when I was reading kind of a little of your backstory, and obviously I've followed you and I'm familiar with your career at college. It reminded me a lot, though, when I got to Miami, I never thought in a million years I was ever going to be able to play there. I mean, I remember calling my dad the first time I got there, and I was like, Dad, like, I thought I was good. I was recruited nationally. Like, and I got down there. We had Kellen Winslow, Kevin Everett. Shockey had just graduated. Bubba Franks. I mean, the legacy of tight ends there was serious. Oh, yeah. And I'm a scout team, little 225-pound freshman. I break the huddle and I look across and it's DJ Williams and Sean Taylor and Jonathan Vilma. And I'm running scout team routes. And I remember calling my dad that first night. I'm like, I'm not sure I could play there. But the point that you made about the competition every day, both amongst the tight ends and just across the team, I know if I didn't go through that as a young player, I would not have been able to build those kind of lessons and foundations to have a long career.
No, of course. Like my freshman year, when I was on scout team, it was, which is also fun because CJ Beth, who was my quarterback for the Niners, was my scout team quarterback my freshman year in Iowa.
Yeah.
And he would slice and dice everybody. But every day I'd go against Anthony Hitchens, you know, with the Chiefs, Christian Kirksey, who just signed with the Packers, like Micah Hyde was on that team. And I would just get torched I would get just crushed. I mean, at Iowa, it was just like, you know, like you thud up. But really, when you're on scout team, you just get tackled and thrown to the ground.
Of course, because they don't care about you.
No, no one cared about anything. But yeah, it's like that experience of really getting like beat up all the time, I think definitely helped my mindset moving forward. Because like, all right, well, that's the level I have to play at, and I have to play better than that if I want to be better than them. So like I said, it took me a couple years to really figure that out, but it definitely helped.
Yeah. So Kirk Ferentz is a guy that my father actually knew for a really long time. And a funny story, when my older brother, Chris, who was graduated high school in 2002, so when he was getting recruited by Iowa, he took one of his official visits to Iowa, and I thought he was going to go there. He loved it. Point of my story, I had a younger brother who's 10 years younger than me, so he was probably like 6 or 7. And as like a recruiting ploy, Kirk Ferentz sent an official offer to my like 6-year-old brother, and he hung it up in his room when he was 6.
That's awesome.
Signed, offer, scholarship. And until he like moved away to go to college, he had an offer from the University of Iowa signed by Kirk Ferentz for 10 years.
That is awesome.
Yeah. So we always thought Iowa, we kind of resonated with the folks out at Iowa. But speaking of that, the offense you find yourself in now, and obviously we're going to dive deeper into it, is very similar. I mean, not many colleges were doing zone run games, tight ends in 3-point positions. So not only are you an undersized guy trying to learn the position, you're not playing in a spread offense in 2-point stances, catching 80 balls. Your hands on the ground with these big old horse offensive linemen, and you're running zone, and you're under center, and you're running play action. But little did you know that it's very similar to what you're being asked to do now in San Francisco.
Yes.
I mean, how awesome is that?
Well, it's honestly probably the best situation for me to get into, because when I got there, like obviously like the schemes are different and you have to learn, it's like a way different learning curve, but like I had the basics down because I did it for 5 years at the University of Iowa. So like when I stepped onto the field for like, you know, Coach Shanahan and like Mike McDaniels, their run game, I was 5 years ahead of everybody else, because like I got the footwork, I got the angles, I got like the concept of what we were trying to do. So that definitely helped with my transition. And then like the play action stuff, like if you figure out, like if you're good at the run stuff, play action super easy. Like you figure out how to, you know, sneak through linebackers and stuff like that. But definitely I thought of it as an advantage. And like I said, I had CJ there my rookie year as well, so like that was even more, so he helped me with it as well. But definitely helped, like it translated perfectly. And I know like Coach Shanahan's offense is a little bit more diverse, and it does a lot more with the motions and all that stuff, but the basic concepts are the same, and being able to take that, what I learned at Iowa, to the next level was awesome.
Yeah. I saw that offense firsthand when we came down to San Fran.
It was wild.
Didn't go great for us. That was a clinic in offense.
Well, my first start of my career, we played you guys at home.
We got that one.
Yeah, well, I come out in the field. It's my first start. They're like, hey, you're just going to start. I just got off of it. I pulled my hammy in camp, right? This was crazy. I pulled my hammy in camp. I missed 2 weeks. I played one game, preseason game, scored a touchdown, and the next day they traded Vance McDonald.
That's right.
And so they're like, hey, look, you're like, this is your job, like, to lose. And I was like, okay, cool. Next day of practice, I tweaked my hammy again. So I'm out the rest of the preseason. Oh. And then they're just like, hey, look, like, we're just going to, hey, go for it, man. So I get out to the Carolina, like I go to the Panthers. First person I see is Cam Newton warming up right in front of me, who's like, for some reason, he looked like he was 7 feet tall.
He is.
Just massive. And I was like, okay, that's cool. First play of the game, I'm pretty sure we're in a play action. I'm blocking Julius Peppers, who I was playing with in Madden 2007. And I was like, dude, this is so cool.
So true.
I was like, oh my God.
I remember that game. We came out to you guys and
crushed. It was 20. I think it was 20-0. Yeah. We went forward on fourth down 5 times, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, you guys were just building something special. But I want to go back. So you're a 5th-round draft pick in 2017, mm-hmm. coming out. And in reality, probably, I don't know if anyone really knew what the expectations were you. But when you hear when you hear Kyle Shanahan talk, he saw something that I don't know if universally everyone across the country, I don't know if he just liked your background at Iowa or he just saw some unique traits that he knew fit with what he wanted to do. But you come in as a rookie, just like you said, they thought highly enough of you that they trade Vance McDonald to Pittsburgh. And then as a rookie, you go in and you beat 5 other guys out, and day one against the Panthers, you're lining up trying to block Julius Peppers as the starter, right? Like, but again, I think there's something to that where you weren't the top 10 pick, you weren't the first round pick, but here you are on game, you know, by game one, you were able to make up so much ground. Like, was it a mental approach? Was it a physical approach? Like, give people an insight to what that, from being drafted in the 5th round, which in the NFL, you're not even guaranteed.
It's not a guaranteed.
You're not even guaranteed to make the roster, let alone find yourself as a day one starter. Mm-hmm. Talk us through that from a mental approach, what it took for you physically to get there.
Like I said, so I got really lucky. One, the run game was pretty similar to everything that I had ever done at Iowa. So like I said, I had a step ahead on everybody else. And also I had CJ there to help me with stuff. But it was mostly just my tight end coach did a great job, John Embry. He does a really good job of taking whatever the offense is and just simplifying it to the point of, hey, it's outside zone. Is the Sam on the ball? Block the Sam. Is the Sam off the ball? You're going to triple or double team with the tackle.
I love triple. Triple is what I call it. We don't call it triple anymore. And it's like blowing my mind.
It's awful.
It's a triple.
This is my dad in the background.
What's up, Dad?
Sorry.
Yeah. No, you're good, man. Tell him I said what's up.
He says what's up.
Hey, man. Big fan.
Thank you. Appreciate it. We're going to talk a lot about him here in a minute.
He said he's going to talk about you a lot later.
Oh, shit.
Okay, so transition. Like I said, the run game. But really it was my tight end coach, he helped me really simplify it. And he always just told me, he always said, hey, look, every time you get a chance out there is an opportunity to show us why you should start. And in OTA, I actually had a really, really good rookie OTAs. Like I had, plenty of the mental mistakes and all that stuff. But I made a lot of big plays as a rookie at OTAs from the leaks on play actions, long touchdowns and stuff like that. And it just kind of translated into camp. My first week at camp went really well. And like I said, I pulled my hammy the first day of pads my rookie year. So I thought I was getting cut right there.
Yep.
But I'd put enough good stuff on tape in OTAs where they really liked it. And then when I came back for that one preseason game I played in my rookie year, I think I had a touchdown. I truck sticked a guy. I don't really know how. I don't remember much of it. I blacked out. But that's just kind of what happened. I don't know if you ever experienced that. When something really cool happens, you're like, all right, I don't know how that happened.
I haven't truck sticked as many guys as you, but I get it. Sometimes when you're just feeling it, you're feeling it.
Yeah, you're just feeling it. And so I had a lot of really good practice reps. Like I said, I knew the offense well enough where I could go out there and not just be a total liability. And then I made plays when they called my number. And that's what the biggest thing is when you get your number calls young, you got to take advantage of that opportunity. Otherwise, you're just going to never, take that next step. Yeah.
And it's very fitting, your father walking across the back of the screen. You've had a lot of people that have impacted, right, your life, your parents, your family, just growing up in a sports background, your father still to this day. You're growing up, you're a huge fan of Dallas Clark.
Yep.
Other guys throughout the league, the Tony Gonzalez's, the Wittens of the world, Gronkowski, Kelsey's rolling. You kind of entered the league at a time where the tight end position was really as high as it had ever been. Mm-hmm. Talk to us a little bit about the impact those guys had, starting obviously from the beginning with Dallas.
Yeah.
And then just other guys throughout the league that as a 2017, 2018 George Kittle, who were the guys that really stood out to you that said, all right, I could be like that guy or I need to do what that guy's doing?
Well, it was actually pretty fun. So I as a kid growing up, when I lived in Iowa, we had season tickets to Iowa football games. And so I'm pretty sure I saw Dallas Clark play every single one of his games in college, which was always really, that was awesome for me. That's awesome. I went to all of his games. I got to watch him. When I started playing fantasy football, Dallas Clark was the first person off my board. It was him and then Ron Dane, who was also one of my favorite football players.
From New Jersey.
Oh, yeah. He's a monster. I love Ron Dane. He's my favorite all-time player. So just growing up in Wisconsin. My junior and senior year of college, my tight end coach, he made us watch film. He picked out five NFL guys and two college guys for us to watch. And we did that back-to-back. I think we did it two or three times. And so I went from watching Gronk, I watched you, I watched Kelsey, I had Shannon Sharp, Jason Witten, and he would just feed us guys to watch. And one of my favorite things he always taught me was, you're not gonna be Gronk, you're not gonna be Travis Kelsey, you're not gonna be Greg Olsen, but you can take parts from all their games and apply it to you. And so this is kind of what I try to do all the time, whether it was releases, hand fighting, physicality in the run game. I just try to watch something and be like, hey, I think I can do that. And I would go out and practice it. And I would just try to add it to my arsenal stuff. And so I kind of feel like, I just tried to be a melting pot of all the NFL tight ends that I thought were really good. And that's kind of what 2017, my rookie year, that's what I did. And it was actually really funny. What really helped me, just remembered it. I don't know. Do you know Logan Paulson?
Yeah.
He was a tight end. All right. Yep. So Logan Paulson was there my rookie year. Coaches talk to players, and then as a rookie, you don't really hear everything that coaches say. So he was a guy that would reiterate it and help me understand it. So he did a great job with that. And he always helped me with my footwork in the run game. Cause what I really struggled with at Iowa was I'd always if you have a big second step, you're just going to fall off the block and all that stuff. You don't have a chance. So he was he helped me with that footwork, him and Garrett Celek, who just retired. And those two were always, they were so helpful for me my rookie year. Cause they're two vets who understood run, all they did was run blocking.
Yep.
And so hey, if you build up your confidence in run game, then the pass stuff will just be easy. So like that's kind of what my mindset growing forward was, the more dominant I can be in the run game, then all the pass game stuff is easy. Like, hey, as long as I dominate this, this will just come with it.
Do you remember specifically like what parts of certain guys, like do you remember what you took from Gronk, what you took from Kelce? Like, do you remember anything specific?
Kelce, I always watch red zone stuff because he just pulls down 10 touchdowns a year. And like, I swear 8 of them are just within the 20 yard line.
Yep.
And it's from like his corner posts to just anything.
He runs that better than anybody.
I know he does.
He kind of nods and sits on that outside leg and crosses that safety's face.
Does great. Like he's
good at it.
He makes that so easy.
Yep.
The amount you call it Carolina scout routes, right?
Yep.
I think I've watched you run thousands of those because
like the backside stuff.
Oh yeah. You just by yourself split open and you just run a 10 yard. Like it's the easiest. Like I want to run that so badly. We're working on it.
But they don't let you do it.
We're working it in. Like we're working.
You can't.
Yeah, I know. It's stealing. It's stealing.
But I've made my career off that.
I know. That's what I watch.
And then as they start out leveraging you and that corner starts widening, we would read it. And when we would run at that leverage and we'd take the post and we'd kind of catch it behind that hook curl guy and we would have a three-way go.
Yep.
Man, Cam really liked that.
Cheating. Yeah, like it literally is. It's like, it's a guaranteed. And then as soon as they sit on it, all right, I'll just go this way then.
Yep.
It's over. So from that's what I got from you. I watched 100,000 of those. Gronk what I really liked watching Gronk was, you know, like how he runs, I know you call it a through route, a special route.
Yep.
How he, like when he have his man to man on his special routes, he runs like a 2 yard route.
He just bangs him
he's gone.
Yep.
And so like, it took me a while to realize that you don't like, just cause it's drawn on paper, it doesn't mean you have to do that. Like you do have freedom as a receiver running your routes. Like you don't, not everything's drawn on paper. And that's one thing I like watching Gronk about. Everything he did was you would never coach it.
Nope.
But it always works for him.
Yep.
And I know it's like he's 6'7", 260, and that's just who he is. But you can take some of that to an extent, like just how he would like just give a nice little step, give him a nice little shoulder shove, and hey, you catch it. Hey, try to tackle me.
Yep.
So that was one thing I always liked watching from him. I've watched tons of Tony Gonzalez tape just with, because John Embry coached him when he was at Kansas City. So, I mean, he would just show me, I think Tony was so great at playing off of, like, he caught everything outside of his body frame. And, you know, like how much extra, like, so like being open in the NFL is what, like 1 yard, maybe, like that's open. Because everyone's so fast in the NFL, everyone's always on, like everyone's grabbing, holding, doing all this stuff. So if you can get 1 yard of separation and catch the ball out in front of you, that's how you catch the football in the NFL. And Tony Gonzalez did such a great job of that. I mean, there's a clip, I think he was playing the Jets. He ran a corner route, was triple covered, caught, like ripped it out of a guy's hands, broke a tackle, and then scored. It was just nuts. Like that's the stuff, like that's what he would always show me, is just Tony Gonzalez. Everything he caught was out in front of him, out to the side. He would always use his hands for everything.
We're going to take a quick break, so make sure you stay tuned for more from TE1. TE1 is brought to you by the strongest, most advanced Chevy Silverado ever. On TE1, we set out to discover what makes a top tight end and what it takes to be the best. One thing that I have learned is to be on top, you've got to work harder and be willing to advance and adapt your game. That forward thinking is what has helped Tony Gonzalez, Travis Kelce, and all the other amazing tight ends that I've interviewed be ahead of the game. These guys are strong, they're dependable. They come through when most people would give up. It takes grit, determination, and these legends aren't afraid to get their hands dirty. These characteristics translate from the field to everyday life. We all strive to be strong and dependable. This is the foundation of what Silverado is. Just like these incredible tight ends, the Chevy Silverado is in a league of its own. Strong, advanced, and dependable. This episode with my guy George is brought to you by Bud Light Seltzer. Now, through the years, I have never been known as the touchdown celebration guy. I don't have a signature dance move, a signature spike, or I'm never going to be on the highlights celebrating after a big catch or a big score. But I challenge my listeners to be better than me. The next time you see me or Kittle or Kelce score and you're at home and you're with your family, I challenge you to celebrate. Let it loose, let it rip, and enjoy a Bud Light Seltzer. Because unlike me, you can let loose and have a lot more fun. And remember, you can have your favorite flavor of Bud Light Seltzer delivered right to your door with BudLight.com/delivery. And you never have to miss a moment of my lack of celebrations. when I talked to Tony for one of these episodes, the one thing that he talked about that he wanted to separate himself from the rest of the league was in his own words, he said, I never felt like I was ever covered. He goes, that guy could have been right on me, but he said my size, we really dove back into his basketball background and body control and whatnot. Mm-hmm. And he just said, I knew in my head that I was never covered. And no matter how close the guy was to me in coverage, I could just go up, attack the ball with two hands, yep, and find a way to come down with it. And I said, well, yeah, we all us guys kind of coming up in your wake. We saw it.
Yeah, we saw it. We saw it, buddy. That's why you had what? How many? 15,000 yards? Yeah.
I mean, could you imagine?
Holy shit.
Excuse
me.
Nope. This is, you can say whatever you want.
Oh, okay, cool.
You go. Just unleash it. Unleash it.
No, I can't do that. I'll get in trouble.
Yeah, that's all right.
But so, yeah, no. Yeah, it was fun. Watching Tony was great. I'm trying to think. Oh, and then I always watch like Shannon Sharp with his everything he caught, he tried to score with.
Yep.
And I was just like, and I think Gronk does the same thing. Like he's like, I'm going to try to score. But Sharp, like his explosion coming out of all the cuts and stuff, he would catch it and he would drop step and get vertical so fast. And that's what makes guys miss. And so like watching that was, you know, pretty inspiring. Cause like I try to do that every time. Every time like, you know, you just catch like a 5 yard hook, I'm trying to get vertical as I'm catching the ball. Cause that makes the two guys that are pinching you,
yep,
you slip right through them.
Yep.
That's worked for me really well. And then Jason Witten, just watching, like we have, you know, the Witten release, just stem down, up and then out.
Yep.
And it's just, it's a way to mess with guys. Like even if you're not the fastest, I mean, he's still open every time.
It's
like, he's still running around. Yeah. It doesn't make sense.
And he doesn't even look like he's going very far. Like,
all of a sudden he's 2 yard separation. You're, yep, just like, wait, how did you do that?
It's an art form, man. And
it really
is. And I'll tell you, the one thing I would tell you, when I was younger, I don't think I appreciated just what it meant to be a route runner that I do now, right? You're a little slower. You're not quite as fast twitch as you were when you were 26. Mm-hmm. And that's going to be something that you just always are going to learn. And whether it's by, mm-hmm, learning from bad releases or bad routes, or I didn't get as much, yep, separation. As you get older, I wish I knew the releases and the stems and setting up routes that I know now. I wish 100%. I could run like I used to with the information I have now. Yeah. I might have been able to catch more yards like you. So 2017, you pop out 500 plus yards, which for a tight end in the NFL, 500 yards as a rookie is a lot.
Yeah. It's
but
hard.
But then I don't know if anybody saw coming what went down in 2018. I mean,
yeah, I was wild.
I remember watching it. I'm like, this guy out in San Francisco is in his second year and this guy's going insane every week. You end up setting, you and Kelsey have kind of like the Mark McGwire, Sammy Sosa home run derby going, mm-hmm, and he beats the record. And then within an hour, you end up setting the record for the most yards ever in a single season by a tight end. Like, what was that year like? I know as a team, you guys had your ups and downs and had, yeah, your struggles, quarterback. You know, you brought in Jimmy G. We'll talk about him in a minute. Then he gets hurt. But just what was that year like? Is your second year in the league, and next thing you know, you're breaking records that have stood for 10 years.
Yeah, wild. It was wild. Like, I will, like, attribute a lot of it to, like, that offseason going into my second year was a huge offseason for me. Like, I moved to Nashville. I ran routes with CJ every single day. I trained with my teammate Trent Taylor, who's a slot receiver for us.
Yep.
And I spent that whole offseason just trying to, cause like, you know, like as a rookie, you still have that kind of baby fat and like you're still growing into your body and stuff like that. I think I lost a lot of like body fat weight and I was able to build more muscle. And it's more of just like, I figured it out, like Coach Shanahan's offense. Like my rookie year, I probably like, you know, like, for example, when you get into a game and like you get into your stance, then wait, I'm not really sure what I'm supposed to do. It's like the worst feeling of all time.
Yep.
Yeah. So like that was my whole rookie year.
And you play slow.
It's just not good. And so like figuring it out and then having that extra OTAs, having that extra camp, I figured out like all everything I was supposed to do. Like I changed up my routines and everything. Like I was much more studious with like my playbook and stuff. And so I knew that going into every single game, if I knew exactly what I was supposed to do, I was going to be able to play fast. And so that was my biggest thing. I just studied 24/7. That's all I did. Like as soon as we got the install, I'd go home. I'd spend the whole night studying. Next day's install, I'd study all that. That's really what I did. And that was a huge thing for me. And then I'm pretty sure like after like three games in the season, I was at like 150 yards receiving. And then Jimmy got hurt against the Chiefs. I had a good game that game. But then after that, like CJ came in. And since we were in college, I mean, he was just like, hey, look, just you're open. Like, I'm just throwing you the ball. So that was awesome. Like that was really fun.
Better.
No, there's nothing
backup
better.
Quarterbacks, in my experience, backup quarterbacks, I told this story to one of the other guys. So I played with Cam 99% of the games. But the handful of games that he missed, Derek Anderson was our backup. If DA was playing, I was going to have 300 yards a game. Yeah. And easily. I knew going in, he was going to throw me 15 balls. We were going to complete 10 to 12.
Yeah.
There's backup quarterbacks.
Love tight ends.
Anytime a starter goes down, it's like the end of the world.
Yeah.
But like secretly to a tight end, selfishly, you know your day is going to get busy and you're going to be productive as hell.
Yeah. No, I mean, that was, and like we have a, like we had guys that we could feed and like get the ball to, but I think after when Jimmy got hurt, we did a lot more like run game, a lot more play action. And like I thrive in play action. Yep. Like running a shallow on a play action is my favorite route in football. Because as soon as you get past those backers, you get the ball, you got one guy to hit you. Yep. If you make a miss, it's a touchdown.
Yep.
So like that, I love that play. And like we just ran a ton of play action. And then we just kept having good games. And I think we played the Chargers. And like I wasn't really thinking anything of like stats or yards like that. And then I think I had an 85-yard touchdown, 82-yard touchdown against the Chargers. And I was like, holy cow, that was awesome. Like, let's just keep doing that and stuff. And so we just, after that one, like Coach Shannon kept giving me like a big play here, a big play there, like on the install. Cause like, you know what plays are going to you and what aren't.
Yeah.
Right. You know, and the install stuff. And so he kept, and like what Coach Shanahan always says, and like I said, my tight end coach always says, like, just take advantage of your opportunity. Like, I'm giving you the opportunity here. You got to catch the ball and you got to run and score. And so that just kept increasing. I kept playing well. And it just kind of, you know, just kept going from there. And then, Nick Mullins came in cause CJ like tore a tendon or something in his hand. And so then Nick comes in and I'm pretty sure he threw me like 10 balls a game, which was awesome.
He was just trying to get rid of that sucker.
So, I mean, if you watch the Raiders game, he made some, he started the game off like 8 for 8. And then he was just like, I had that one handed catch. I ran the wrong route and he's just closed his eyes and threw it.
Yeah.
And I was like, sick, man. Thanks.
Hey, you run the wrong route, you catch the ball. That's the rule in the NFL.
Yeah, no, I didn't. It was, you know, hey, so stick nods, right?
Yeah.
You know, if it's split safeties, you bend it in. If it's if it's one single, you keep it in the
stay
two.
Stay wide. Yep.
It was single high. I cut it across the field.
You just got to play ball, man.
Just got to play ball.
I always told guys, I don't run routes on paper.
No.
Whatever. I said, I'm just going to run to where they're not. And if they're out there, you got to see me go inside and vice versa. I said, let's not make this hard, man. I'm going to run where they're not within some confines of the play. Just put it on me.
Please.
So you're not going to get any arguments from me. This is a safe zone. I talked to Kelsey about what it was like coming in with a guy like Andy Reid coming up, right? Every Wednesday we come in, we have the first install, first and second down, run game, pass game. For you to come in with a guy like Shanahan, whose offensive pedigree, his history, obviously being around his father as a young kid, all the way now as the play caller, head coach, what is a Wednesday like for you to come in? Like the excitement level when we were rolling, there was 5 or 6 years. Like Wednesday morning, I couldn't wait to see like what wrinkle we had, what new formation I was going to line up in, what new route. Like, and I can only imagine what it's like for you and the amount of things that they do with you, and then you put Kyle Shanahan there. Like, what is that weekday prep like? And how excited are you to come see what they have in store?
So there's two parts of this. The first part where I'm not excited for is Wednesdays. My tight end coach always makes us meet a half hour earlier because tight ends, we motion and adjust like 80% of the time out of the motions.
Yep.
And so we do like a 30-minute meeting of just the motions on the, like, the, he's like, hey, look, like, that's I don't know what it is, but you're going to start out here. Like, is there anything better than like you start outside the wide receiver motion all the way across and then you're like run a go?
And you're exhausted by the time the ball snapped?
Yeah, it's just.
I hate motioning.
I hate it.
I can't see where, like, I always tell my guys, like, you want to motion, fine. But like, mostly just let me line up, let me see where everybody is, snap the ball, and I'm going to rip it.
So, like,
I don't drives me nuts.
So like what I learned is like my tight end coach always, he's like, hey, you got to motion way faster. I'm like, if I motion fast and I can't see anything. So I have probably the slowest motions in the NFL. I just do. Cause I'm like, okay, I got a motion and okay, there's the safety. It's man to man. All right. Now I know what's going on. So like I use it now, like, and I also use it to catch my breath at this point. Cause I motion so slow and it's,
you have to,
oh, you have to
trust me, bud.
Yeah, I know. So
I feel like this is like a therapy session. Like I feel like I feel like you're able to get a lot of things off your chest knowing that I'm on your side.
It is. It's so like that's why also
I get
tight
it,
ends
man.
Are the best.
I get
There's
it.
No one better than tight ends.
Of course.
Tight ends love each other. We have each other's back and we all experience the same stuff.
I get it. Well, now that you brought it up, I was going to talk about it later, but now that you brought it up, I do have a bone to pick.
Yep.
So you started last year this National Tight Ends Day.
Yeah.
It happened to be, at least the time it was brought up to me where they were miking everybody, was the day we played you guys.
Yeah.
It was supposed to be a huge matchup, and we were coming off. We were doing good, and you guys were, I think, undefeated still.
Yeah, I think we're 5-0, 6-0.
Didn't go great for us.
No.
The game didn't go great. I only caught one ball. So National Tight End Day was not great. But. You have this championship belt.
Yeah.
How come I've never gotten the belt?
You have to win. So this is how I understood it. You have to win the fantasy football points. You had to have the most points of the week.
Got it.
That's what it was. Because
I might have to go back a few years.
No, you got to. Yeah, dude. Seattle, you're going to get plenty.
Maybe,
don't worry about it.
This year. All right. Yeah. So, okay. I feel better now. I thought you chose.
No.
I was seeing like Ertz got it and all these guys got it. And I was like, what the hell, man? I thought like show some love to the old guy and send him the belt.
No, it was actually just a little bit of resentment because during the combine, you commented that my stance was too tight and I couldn't run block in the NFL. And so I was like, you know what, Greg? Screw you, man.
Yes, it's coming out. Our therapy session. How long? You've waited 3 years to tell me that. That's awesome.
Yeah, I know.
I probably pumped your tires up hard, though. I probably gave you a lot of compliments.
No, so it was the funny part. My dad actually sent me the clip and goes, what the fuck does this guy know?
Did he really? Did he really?
Yeah, he said, excuse my language, but yes. Because it was a run blocking drill, which is run blocking at the combine's tough in general because
it's so tough.
It's awful. Have
you widened your stance?
Oh, yeah, 100%.
So I was right.
You weren't wrong, but the way you said it, my dad was offended.
Tell your dad, if he's in the room, tell your dad right now, no hard feelings.
Hey, Greg says hard feelings.
Oh, that's all. I feel a lot better. I feel like I had to get that off my chest because I feel totally like fine. I was left out. I was left out of like the tight end belt family.
See, I only got it back one more time. That was tough. I wanted it. Did you see? Hey, so here's the thing. So on the belt, right? This is funny. This is Zach Ertz, right? Get this. So the belt, right? They put a picture of it on me. And then on the side, that's where you're supposed to, it says like week 9, like most points. And so like Noah Fant signs there. Week 10, Travis Kelce signs there. Zach Ertz just signed across my face. I was like, dude, Zach, what? And he was like, they didn't tell me where to sign it, dude. I was like, oh my goodness. It's right across my face.
Are you going to keep it going this year?
I mean, I think we should. Well, it was really cool. Yeah, how it ended was they auctioned it off and it like sold for like $6,000
and all
the money went to the Iowa Children's Hospital.
Done.
Yeah. So I was like, yeah, let's keep it going. And it was also really fun as a family friend ended up buying it too.
Oh, that's dude. Let's do it again, man. That'll be fun. Maybe this year I can participate.
Maybe I think we should put a bunch of tight ends on the front. That's how I'm in.
Hey, take it and run with it, man. That's your day.
Okay. I like it. It is fun. I don't see like, hey, the only reason I started that was because I just don't think tight ends are appreciated enough.
They're not. That's why we're doing this series. We got some of the all-time greatest, the two best of today. I mean, you and Kelce obviously have done things that I don't think anyone ever anticipated anyone ever doing and let alone do it every single year. So, all right. So you brought up your dad. And now that I know he hates me, let's talk about that a little more. Cause obviously I grew up, my father has had the greatest impact on me, obviously not only as a football player, but just who I am, has been my coach since I was able to walk all the way up through high school, still calls me after my NFL games. I'm 35. He still calls me. I could have 160 yards and 8 touchdowns, but like a ball on the sideline I didn't come up with. And the first thing he'll say, what happened on that ball on the sideline? Did it get away from you? I'm like, Dad, I just had 9 catches. Yeah, I had 9 catches. And you're going to bust my balls about that? So your father, I know a lot of people, and you've talked about it a lot, but I think it's really cool. Like those letters he sends to you that you read to yourself every day. Just talk about the impact that your father has had on you, that he still has on you, and just what that relationship is like.
Well, like my dad's my best friend. And I think it took me a while to realize like, you know, like in college, you're not, you know, hey, I'm doing my own thing. I'm in college. Like I'm head honcho. I'm all this.
Yep.
But really like, towards the end of my career, I really started to appreciate the letters. And like early on, the first year I played at Iowa, when we started doing the letters, it was really fun for me because it was like, I didn't really talk to my dad that much in college because like I said, you know, you're out doing your own stuff. But that was like a way for us to communicate. And it was this way for us to keep our relationship going. And the letters just kind of grew and grew. And they went from, you know, it's kind of like my mental preparation too. Because like that was the first thing I do like on game day, like, you know, you kind of have to flip a switch to play football. And that was like my first, like that's my first step of getting that switch.
Like flipped. Bashing your head against the wall.
That's the last one.
Got it. Got it.
Yeah, that's on the way out of the
locker
room. Got
it. My bad. I'm still trying to wrap my head. I got it. Go ahead.
Yeah, no. Well, hey, on that, bash your head against the wall. The first hit in a football game is the worst.
I get it.
So headbutt a wall, there's the first hit. There, nothing else is going to hurt.
Remember, this is judgment-free zone. I'm on your side. I'm on your side.
I also puke before every game, so that's fun too. It's just off. I don't
know. You got a lot going on before the game.
I'm a mess, man.
I'm just trying to warm up. I'm just trying to see if I can get my body temperature up so I can run on the first play.
Just trying to get a little sweat going.
Oh, my God. You'll get there. You'll get there.
The first series is always the worst because you go warm up. You can't breathe. You're not warmed up.
It's the worst.
The first series is just always brutal. It's awful. And there's nothing like, what am I going to do? Over warm up?
Buddy, you got to tell me. The first four plays of the game, it's like I'm not going to make it through the first quarter. You're breathing heavy. Your legs feel – yeah, it's anxiety. I always feel like it's just mental. It's like anxiety.
Yeah, I'm with you on that 100%. I don't forget, we were playing Seattle last year, and it was a first – we went three and out. But on that third down, I had a stop and go. And I was just pulling a trailer behind me. I could hardly run. I was like, oh, no, this is a bad call.
I need to go regroup.
Coach, I need – can the defense like have an 8-play drive, hold them to the field goal? I'll be ready after that.
I get it. So 2019, you guys have a historical season.
Mm-hmm.
As I'm watching this play out, it brought back a lot of memories for my 2015 season. We have a historically great season. And unfortunately for both of us, we come up short in the Super Bowl.
Mm-hmm.
I remember walking off the field after losing the Super Bowl and watching Denver celebrate. We had just gone 17-1.
Yeah.
We never thought in a million years that we were going to lose. We were scoring 35 a game in the playoffs against Seattle. We put up 34 against Seattle. We put up 40-plus against the Cardinals. I mean, we were rolling.
Mm-hmm.
We come up to Denver. We stink. They beat us. I remember the next 3 days, I remember more than I remember the game. I remember walking off the field. I remember the plane ride home. I remember going to sitting at a Mexican restaurant with Cam and Luke and Ryan Khalil and just crushing margaritas and like queso dip, just like drowning our sorrows. Like,
yep.
Similar experience? Like, can you see?
Well, yeah, no, I'm pretty sure. Yeah, after this, yeah, I remember definitely everything post Super Bowl. Let's see. I was up to like 6 a.m. just like talking football with my dad and my family. And then at 8 a.m., I caught a flight to Vegas with Richard Sherman.
How was it? Let's talk about that. How was that?
It's a blast.
I bet.
I'll tell you, if you want to go to Vegas, like, Richard Sherman's a great guy to go to Vegas with.
He's connected.
Oh, yeah. He, like, I mean,
where do you guys stay?
Honestly, I have no idea what it was. Like, we got dropped. We took a private jet. It was like the whole defense. And then it was like me and a couple other offensive guys.
How did the offensive cut? How'd you make the cut?
Well, Sherman invited a bunch of guys. And it was like, I mean, obviously you win. I think the whole team goes.
Yeah.
But it's just, you know, it is what it is. Not everyone wanted to go. But I was like, I'm not going to not go to Vegas.
You have to go.
Yeah, like I'm not going to not go. And we literally, as soon as we got off the jet, put us in like these buses with super tinted windows. And next thing I know, I'm in the back door of a hotel. I'm like, hey, here's your room. You're going to meet out here. There's a private place to, you know, go gamble and stuff. Otherwise, you guys are on your own. I was like,
done.
I'm in. Yeah. No, don't. Me and my wife had a blast.
That sounds. I'm glad your wife went. That makes me feel better. That makes me feel better.
I this is the second time I've gone to Vegas with my wife, and I have thoroughly enjoyed it. Yeah, she does Vegas well. She does Vegas well, though.
Perfect.
Yeah, she thrives.
I get it. But I remember like not turning on the TV.
Nope.
Like I couldn't stand like if on Twitter there was a picture of them like on the parade. Like it's still to this day, like something that I think about a lot.
Yeah, it sucks.
It's awful. I don't know if people know it sucks. But until you lose the Super Bowl, you have no idea how bad it sucks.
No, it's literally this. It sucks. It's just, it is what it is.
There's no way around it.
Yeah. And you're just kind of like, well, that was a lot of hard work for nothing.
It's still
like at the same time, like, hey, like, you know, winning the NFC Championship was a blast. Like we had a great season and stuff, but you're just kind of like, well,
I get it.
Things have, the ball has to bounce our way again for a whole season. That's the crazy thing. You guys, getting back there.
Yeah. But you guys are so talented. You're so young.
Nick Bosa is really good.
How's he? Is he any good? That guy's an animal.
I'm telling you.
Your whole D-line, though, is ridiculous.
It's in
I was OTAs thrilled.
And campers.
So you guys get rid of
Defo.
You get rid of DeForest Buckner. You send him to Cleveland, right?
Colts.
And I'm like, yes. one less guy, knowing we got to play you now twice a year. And then you guys go ahead and draft the damn animal out of freaking South Carolina, wherever he's from.
He is a monster.
I mean, can you guys – every time I watch the draft, every time someone in my division draft picks, I want them to pick like a guard, an offensive
draft
tackle.
Offensively.
Just draft anyone who doesn't have to go against me. Don't draft a safety in the first round. Don't draft some animal D lineman. And damn, you guys go ahead and you do it again.
Well, I'm pretty sure the Seahawks and the Cardinals each drafted only safeties and linebackers.
Ridiculous.
Yep, they're coming after us, baby.
But I think they're coming after you. I'm just more of a stopgap.
See, that's what you think, but you're going to be just sneaky the whole season and just catch a bunch of touchdowns.
I'm ready, bud. I'll tell you what, when you're 35, just hope that there's a virtual offseason. Don't hope that there's a global pandemic, but hope when you're 35 that for whatever reason, there's no actual offseason. This has been the best.
Awesome.
It's been the best offseason of my entire career. I've never had better training. I've never been able to stick to my nutrition, my meals, my recovery. There's nothing else to do.
No, it's awesome. Like literally my day is, okay, I got my lift and I got my speed work and then I have my OTA meetings and then I'm just going to recover the rest of the day. That's all it is. It's amazing. I don't have to worry about anything else. Like OTAs is really nice, especially for rookies, you know, like they get their reps and they figure out your offense and stuff. But if you don't have to take the wear and tear on your body,
it's amazing.
It's amazing. Oh, like what's more fun than the run game in shells?
Oh. And you get that overzealous rookie who puts his face mask on your collarbone.
My first rep of last year, I'm pretty sure like we're in shells and I had a sift block. So I'm coming back across a formation. We're in shells. And Solomon Thomas, he's a horse,
yep,
right?
Yep.
He just put his face mask through my whole shoulder. I did like a 360 spin and I was like,
come on, guy.
Oh, what are you doing? Goodness gracious. I was like, no, please don't.
No awareness.
Oh, dude, that's what I do not like about OTAs is run game. It's just so tough.
It's the worst. I just want to go in for the passes. Well, obviously, you know, you've had a historically great first 3 years. The talk of the offseason now is George Kittle's going to reset the market. I had a great talk with Tony G about it. And I blamed him that the tight end market is so low. He was so great for so long that no one was able to ever build the market up because he was the market. Well, here for really the first time, we have a guy, being you, who has every possibility to just not only top the market, but to blow it out. And we've all read your agent's comments, and I'm not asking you to say anything crazy, but this is something that I just hope you realize, no pressure. Because you're holding the hopes for every single future tight end who's going to come to the NFL for the next decade. You got to set this mark.
Yep.
All right. I just want to make sure you understand the gravity of the situation.
Oh, I know. I get it. Yeah. No, like I said, tight ends have not been respected for long enough. That bar needs to go up a little bit. And by a little bit, I mean a lot.
A lot. A lot. It does. So tell us now, how much do you want? I mean, just tell us. I'm just kidding. You don't have to tell us.
I just want what I'm deserving.
You don't got to tell me, brother. I was the worst contract negotiator as a player. Like, I wanted to take the first deal that anyone ever offered me. Like, and my agent would be like, dude, you got to calm down. Like, I always timed the market wrong. I had my first 1,000-yard season going in. I had one more year left on my deal, and they came to us with an extension. And I was like, yeah, definitely do an extension. That next year, I had 1,100 yards and we went to the Super Bowl. And I was like, shit, I would have been a free agent after 1,100 yards and a Super Bowl. I could have reset the market. So I've had horrible luck. So I hope you crush the market.
That's the plan. I can't wait to, you know, I think it's going to be really fun.
You think?
Yeah.
I think it will. I think safe to say. That's it. You know what else I was thinking, which would be cool, and I don't know if we should have thought of this earlier in the offseason. You know how they do that like O-line camp and they get like O-linemen from around the country?
I'm all in.
We need to pick a city and
Vegas.
Done.
Yeah.
Done. That's exactly what I was thinking.
So hear me out now. Because Lane Johnson, he's a close friend of mine. My dad coached him when he was at Oklahoma. We should do, because they do it in Vegas, and I think they're still doing it this year, actually. I don't know where they're doing it.
All right.
But we should try to tie it in with them. We'll do our own tight end thing. And we could come together for like a tight end offensive tackle day.
That sounds awesome. I love O-linemen.
They're the best people.
All right. After this call, we're going to connect. We're going to get Kelsey. We're going to get Ertz. We're going to get Gronk. We're going to get guys from all over the league, and we're going to do a national tight end offseason day.
Ooh, I like that. Yeah.
We'll work on the branding. That was my first thought. First grant.
We're gonna let Kelsey do the branding and we'll just do everything behind the scenes.
Done.
He's got it.
Done. Yeah. All right. That's gonna happen.
I like that. That's a great idea.
I think that'd be fun, great. Man.
Tight end, like I said, one, I don't think we get the respect that we deserve, but I don't know if we work together enough because we all like do the same stuff. So might as well help each other. And then the more the better tight ends that you have, the more money that the tight ends can make together.
High tide raises all ships.
Exactly. That's what I want. All right. I'll be blessed.
Well, be the high tide. Well, listen, listen, bud, this has been awesome. And again, thanks for taking this time. As I said, you've brought the tight end position to levels that I don't know anybody thought, after the Gronks and Kelsey, I think everyone might've thought that was going to be it for a while. And now here comes you and you jump onto the scene in only 3 years to continue to elevate the position. You are the types of guys that we want to talk to. You're the type of guy that I know I root for. I watch every Thursday when I look at the handful of guys around the league to see what they're doing. You're one of them. So keep doing your thing, man. I wish you nothing but the best. Thank you so much for sharing your perspective, not only on your career, your family, your life, the tight end position. We got to stick together.
Oh, yeah.
And we got to get to Vegas for an off-season program.
Got to get to Vegas.
And we're going to train.
Maybe Ibiza. Like, who knows?
I mean, I heard that's the place to go. So we'll.
Yeah, why not?
I'm open-minded.
Yeah, I'm good on that, too. Awesome. But, yeah, also, yeah, good luck with you in Seattle, man. That's going to be a blast. Just don't play very well against us.
I'll see you twice a year, buddy. I'll see you twice a year.
Just score, one touchdown and then don't do anything else, though.
Well, same to you.
Yes, sir.
Take care, bud. I mean, what can you say about George Kittle? The guy is incredible. What he's done in his first 3 years in the NFL is unheard of. And he's got the personality. He's got the charisma to match. He's going to be a superstar in this league for a long time. And he plays a huge role into kind of bringing this conversation into the modern times. If you've enjoyed the show, don't forget to subscribe, rate, review, and tell your friends. Next episode, I'll be talking to Cole Kmet, so be sure to listen in. TE1 is a Blue Wire podcast.
I'm MJ Acosta Ruiz.
And I'm Lindsay Zarniak.
And together we'll be hosting the On Her Turf podcast. This summer, On Her Turf is hosting a daily Olympics podcast that focuses exclusively on women's sports and the amazing women competing in Tokyo. We'll bring you interviews with Olympians and in-depth analysis on your favorite teams.
Plus, we're going to talk about some of the challenges still facing women's sports today.
So join us daily at On Her Turf as we cover all the excitement of the Tokyo Olympics.
Be sure to check us out on Apple Podcasts and be sure to follow On Her Turf on Twitter and Instagram too.